listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're going to focus on the Atlanta Falcons because they got bombed by Philadelphia at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, their home stadium, on Sunday. 32-6. They were held to two field goals, which, all right, look, did anybody think the Atlanta Falcons were going to be really good this year? No, but this is still a surprising outcome, given Arthur Smith is the head coach and Matt Ryan is still the quarterback. And D. Orlando Ledbetter joins us, Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and helps break down what we saw from the Falcons in this loss to Philadelphia. How are you, my friend?
Hey, I'm doing great, Tony. Thanks for having me this morning.
Of course. By the way, on the Progressive guest line, Progressive get making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. All right, listen, no one really thought Atlanta was going to win 12, 13 games this year. But given that, how surprising was the fact that this team lost by this score, 32-6?
Yeah, very surprising. We were anticipating a much closer game, expecting a competitive team. They played a little bit early. Then things started to get away from them right before the half. And then in the second half, they couldn't come out and do anything. You know, six straight punts, two possessions to end on turnover on downs. It was a little bit surprising that, you know, a coach came in with the offensive, from an offensive mindset, and he couldn't get his offense going in his first game.
Yeah, he said afterwards, obviously, he takes the blame. That's coach speak. That's fine. Matt Ryan said afterwards, you know, that some of it's on us too. How much was it the play calling? How much was it just execution by the players in your view?
Well, I think it was a big miscalculation by Arthur and Terry Fontenot to not fix this offensive line. They didn't do it. They brought the line back. They fixed the whole running back field. They got rid of the secondary. But the offensive line can't hold up in pass protection, and they know it. I don't know why they didn't fix that this offseason. They brought back all the same guys. They drafted a couple kids who clearly aren't ready to play, and they got to play them because some of the free agents got hurt that they signed. Josh Andrews and Matt Gonneau was re-signed or restricted free agent. So, you know, they have to start a rookie out there and rotate a rookie in when he couldn't go. So I thought they could have fixed the line because, you know, Matt Ryan's been getting sacked, been getting hit, got sacked over 40 times the last 3 years, and I think they misplaced their priorities on rebuilding this roster.
Did they make adjustments when they realized, well, Matt Ryan is under some duress? Did you see them make those kind of adjustments that you need to make when certain things aren't working?
No, they didn't have time to try screens and dink and dunk down the field and the draw game. You know, once you got behind, started snowballing, 15-6, it was pretty much over because they couldn't punch it in the red zone there at halftime. But then the Eagles get another score and go up 23-6. And, you know, at that point, you know, the screen and draw game, quick passes. You could have went back to the no huddle, which I worked earlier. But, he didn't have any answers. And when they did get moving, Tony, they had the penalty. They had 12 for 99, false starts all over the place. The young linemen were jumpy. Ryan had to take a couple intentional groundings. It was a hot mess.
Obviously, the Eagles scored a lot of points. Jalen Hurts with three touchdowns. Defensively, what was the grade on the Falcons on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, that's got to be a D. Got to be a D, Tony. But Brian Baldinger has got a video out there where both of the Eagles tackles are just like man crushing Dante Fowler and Jacob Towards the Mariner, the Falcons pass rusher, just pushing them to the ground. And he was like, hey, they're doing life's work out there. So they got no pressure, and they were playing zone. Jalen knew where to go with it. He hit his check downs. He hit his out. Even Zach Ertz got hurt. They ran a couple pick plays that worked. And it looked pretty good for the Eagles, not so much for the Atlanta Falcons.
I think a lot of people would wonder, like Kyle Pitts, how did he look at four catches in the game? But the way he ran routes or whatever his job was, did you see something there in this game? Or do we still have to wait a few before we see potential?
Oh, no doubt. He got it. They went to him on a 4th-and-1. He picked it up. They were down. They had to, one of the plays up the field was his seam route, which was sweet. But when they were trying to pound the ball on those first couple drives and they ran it, you know, they had 100 and something in the first half. He wasn't in the game because he's not going to be an inline blocker. So people are like, where's Kyle Pitts? Where's Kyle Pitts? No, they have their mass unit out there, and he's not a part of that yet. You got to remember, the kid's just 20, 245 pounds maybe. And, you know, you probably don't want him on a bunch of linebackers and defensive ends right now.
How, in terms of this game, I mean, look, if the Atlanta, if Atlanta had lost to a bunch of other teams, we would be like, okay, that's fine. New coach, team that went 4-12 last year. But the Eagles were a mess too. The Eagles were coming in with a new head coach. They were a little concerned about Jalen Hurts and whatnot. Does this open a wide open look into this Falcons because of who they played and how well that team particularly played coming in?
Yeah, no question about it, because both teams made moves in the offseason to try to fix things. You know, the Eagles, you know, they had a line. They had both defensive and offensive lines. They got some receivers. They got the quarterback. Miles Sanders is already there. You know, they got rid of Carson Wentz and you know, a bad contract. Falcons got rid of Julio, replaced their running back. Replaced the whole defensive secondary. Still don't have a pass rush. Brought in a defensive coordinator out of retirement. Now we'll get to see how those moves work over the long haul. But we at least know here early on at the outset of the season, the Falcons' moves haven't worked yet.
Dear Orlando Ledbetter, again, Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Before, I did want to set the scene up, though, for people. Because you helped us with our preview earlier this summer, this when we were doing that. What was Arthur Smith getting coming to Atlanta, a team that went 4-12? So we can talk about some of the things that weren't working. What did he inherit?
Yeah, he inherited a veteran quarterback with a bad line, no running back, wide receivers. He had those, but he elected one of them didn't want to be here anymore. On the defensive side of the ball, he had a tackle and a middle linebacker and Grady Jarrett and Deion Jones. And had some other guys that they had counted on that they hadn't delivered, like Dante Fowler, you know, paid him some money. He took a pay cut to stay. And he had draft picks, 9 draft picks. And, you know, that's what he had coming into Atlanta. Cupp wasn't exactly bare, but it wasn't chock full of all pros either.
If you don't mind, I want to ask you your opinion on something, because I do live in Nashville, and during the game, Julio Jones got a personal foul. Mike Vrabel called him out publicly for that. In your experience with Julio Jones, does he respond well to that? Does he respond well to sort of that public approach that Mike Vrabel took?
No, that was a bad move by Coach Vrabel. That won't, you know, Julio's one of the guys that, hey, if you got a problem with it, come to me. Yeah. I don't need to see this on TV. Coach Vrabel's got, you know, he's got a problem on his hands right now. Hopefully they're in the office chopping it out right now. But, yeah, Coach Vrabel kind of stuck me a little bit. You know, you get beat by 23 points, you want to pick on one play by Julio.
Right.
What else were you coaching, Mike Vrabel?
Where's his comments on Taylor Lewan? That's what I want to know, because he got beat by Chandler
right,
Jones.
Yeah,
I think he's still getting beat by Chandler Jones right now.
What did you coach him to do, Coach Vrabel?
That's right. Man, I love talking to you, my friend. We got to catch up soon. Thank you so much, my man.
Sure, no problem, Tony. Thanks for having me.
You got it. D. Orlando Ledbetter. He's, again, one of our favorite guests on the show. Yeah, he. Back to that issue. I knew immediately when I saw Vrabel do this that wasn't going to fly. You just get the feeling with veterans. And especially the way Julio is kind of is anyway, like, you know, he's an all pro. Look, Julio Jones does not have to explain who he is to anybody.
Nope,
right?
Not one bit.
Right. Like, he does not have to. He doesn't bring the resume to remind you of who he is.
And he's not one of those type of players where a coach needs to set an example.
Exactly.
Because that's what it felt like. It was like, well, I'm going to set an example with this guy. No. You leave him alone.
Leave him alone. Talk to him privately. You go, hey, man, I know. But also, guys like Julio Jones, they do this. You don't have to tell them that it's a, it does, you know, they know. They do it. They go, you know, it's got the better of me. I've been in this league a long time. It shouldn't bother me, but it did. So I'm really sorry about that. Calling Julio Jones out in public like Vrabel did, I'd like the way he put that. That's a problem. It's a problem. Problem, problem, problem.
Didn't Vrabel, I'm sure at some point, didn't Vrabel cover Julio?
Like, it's seriously, it's, I don't know why he did it. I really don't. I like I said, where's your Taylor Lewan comments? Because Taylor Lewan is probably still on the ground.
Yeah.
From what Chandler Jones did to him in that game. It's unbelievable.
Chandler like when Jones you have to go to cut him off in the carpool lane. And
when you go to Twitter, Twitter and social media immediately after game, go, yeah, I'm sorry about that. I screwed up. I've got to learn from this. You know it's bad, right? Like Taylor Lewan went right to social media to apologize for his abysmal performance, and Vrabel's going to call out Julio Jones for this getting destroyed by the Arizona Cardinals. Again, this isn't a rookie that you have to say, hey man, this is the league, man. This is the NFL. Julio Jones, he's. You know, he knows what he's, you know,
he's probably going into the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Vrabel's not.
This is dumb.
I don't know. But, you know, one question was answered.
Which was?
Ledbetter brings it.
He does, man. He's really good.
He's not deterred by his Falcons.
He is really good. I've always liked him. I liked him from the first day we did stuff together. He was so fun.
Yep.
And every time we get him on, it's. He has this over-enthusiasm, which is so cool to
have. And he still believes.
He does.
He still believes.
He does. If I asked him, what do you think is going to happen Sunday when they go play Tom Brady and the Buccaneers? But I think they're going to bounce back, give him a good game. I don't think they're going to win, but I think it'll be they probably lose by 27 points.
Yep. But it's not gonna. Hey, he's still got faith. He's the best. He's the best beat writer for them.
If you're gonna have a beat writer, you might as well jump in.
Have a fan.
In the swimming pool.
Have a fan as a beat writer as well.
Oh, I used to sit next to Bronco beat writers that would just look at me and go, "This team stinks. I hate this team." And I go, "I know," because they were. It was the years where they were bad. And
maybe he's that way at home behind closed doors.
Final years of Shanahan, which were just a mess. He was like, "Oh, this team stinks." But yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. Maybe it's a face, and he's like, you know.
Yeah. It's like, I always got to be upbeat and positive. He closes the door. He's like, oh, God.
We have a guy in Jacksonville that does that, too. Who's our guy in Jacksonville? Oh, the guy works for the Jacksonville.
Yeah. Well, they kind of have to be the team cheerleader.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. When you get your checks, they got to, you know. Oh, I used to love Gene Deckerhoff, you know, the play-by-play guy of Florida State and Tampa Bay. He does both, which is, I just think it's amazing. He will go call a Florida State game, and then he'll be with the Buccaneers wherever they are. Means down the highway to Tampa, or he flies to wherever Tampa is. Like, he's just busy. He calls the Seminoles. And when you talk to him, he's such a homer. He's a wee broadcaster, right? He'll be like, oh, we need this touchdown. He's a wee guy, right? And when he closes out your interview, he'll go, all right, you go, hey, thanks, Gene, for coming on. He's like, all right, thank you. Go Noles, go Bucks. And then one time he hung up on me. I was doing an interview in Colorado, and he hung up on me because the furniture guy arrived. He didn't even say goodbye. He was waiting on furniture, and he told my producer, he goes, oh, yeah, I got furniture guy coming later on. He goes, but we got a couple of minutes. We can do this. I go, okay, great. I didn't know that. I did not get the message that he had furniture guy coming. So we're doing the interview, and I ask him, like, I think Bobby Bowden was still the coach then or something. And I might have asked him about something about coaching against this, whatever it was. And he starts the answer. And then in the background, you hear ding dong. And he goes, gotta go. Click.
At least you got that. What I'm picturing in my mind is you asking a question, go, did we lose him?
Yeah,
Is he still there?
He just got ding dong, gotta go. Click. And then my producer came up and goes, oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you had furniture coming. And I just burst out laughing
for
5 minutes. I could not stop laughing that was the reason he cut our interview short, was a couch was coming or a dresser or a bed set or whatever he ordered. Maybe he was afraid they would take it back to the factory or the warehouse if he didn't answer in the next 3 seconds. And then I thought, because he's an older guy, wait a minute. It's possible he was doing a landline call from a phone that was attached to the wall. So he couldn't just go to the door, open the door and go, yeah, guys, bring it upstairs while I'm on the phone. He was probably in the kitchen on a phone attached to the wall. And he was like, yeah,
that's
I got two choices. I either answer the door or I stay on with you and they leave because I can't answer the door. And he made the right call.
Inquiring minds would want to know, rotary or push button?
That's what probably rotary. It's probably rotary. I mean, he's up there in age. I'm not saying he's old, but he's older than us. So he probably had a rotary phone in his kitchen. That's the way it was. All right, that's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.